Studio A is underwritten by Concordia University, Wisconsin St. Louis Center, with classes beginning monthly. The St. Louis Center phone is 314-984-8840 or on the web at cuw.edu/St. Louis.
All right, now you know the usual spiel about what that happy sound means, but today, especially today, what an added delight that signal brings, because just a few hours ago in the United States House of Representatives, Congress, or at least part of Congress, actually kept its word, imagine that, to defund Planned Parenthood and to start rolling back federal funding for abortion services broadly in the health care law and in other aspects of our federal government as well. This is a good day for the pro-life cause. It's a wonderful day for the cause of life in general. But here's the problem. Where do we go from here? This is just one part of our government that has voted to defund Planned Parenthood. And you've seen the videos over the last couple of weeks about the really just awful business practice they have of, well, trafficking or aiding and abetting people that are trafficking sex slaves and all sorts of things. And we'll get into that in just a moment. But let's celebrate for a moment that there are good things happening in the pro-life cause today. Good afternoon. Studio A on listener-supported KFUO Radio. I'm Roland Lettner. Thank you so much for joining us on the program on what really is a very fine Friday afternoon here in the St. Louis area. But wherever you are, and I would encourage you to go to the iTunes store and download your KFUO iTunes app. It's free. You can use it on your iPhone or any other smartphone that can accommodate those apps from iTunes. And we are where you are, and you can take us wherever you go. You don't necessarily need an internet connection. You don't have to be tethered to your laptop or your desktop. You can just take your smartphone, put the headphones on, hit that KFUO app, and there you go. Hey, quick note, coming up in the next segment, Colonel John Eidsmo will be joining us. He's a speaker for Lutherans for Life. He's in town for a conference. We'll be speaking in Herman, Missouri this weekend about a number of different things, like Islam and a fellow named Herman the German, as well as, well, the pro-life cause. He'll be here for a half hour in the next segment. We'll be talking about all sorts of different aspects of this legislation and, well, multiculturalism and the creep of Islam and so on. You'll want to join us, but now, in this segment of Studio A, raise your voices and sing in celebration. A great day for the pro-life cause. We're joined by Brad Mattis, who is just an unceasing, a tireless laborer in the field of the pro-life cause, co-founder and director of the Life Issues Institute out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Brad, congratulations.
Well, I just want to echo your voice on the radio recently who said yabba dabba doo, because that's really how we pro-lifers feel today.
Now, this is remarkable. Now, what is more remarkable, that you have funding for Planned Parenthood and the abortion funding in the health care law being rolled back by Congress, or that a handful of congressmen actually kept their word?
Yeah, it's kind of an unbelievable day, isn't it? And I've been telling Republican members of Congress and leaders since before the election that if you get the majority, we're going to be holding your feet to the fire. And after the election, I've been reminding them that just as quickly as they were voted in, they could be voted out. And they all readily agreed that their reputation and career was on the line here. So in a way, I'm not terribly surprised, because they knew that they wouldn't be employed if they didn't stand up for what they promised. What is really monumental, though, is that here we have the ice has finally been broken. Planned Parenthood, who has been long considered a premier provider of family planning, crucial services for families across the United States, the truth is now being told. People are seeing Planned Parenthood for what it is, the largest chain of abortion mills in the nation, a chain that regularly and every day breaks laws to further its cash flow for abortion services and other things. And now, finally, there is a move on Capitol Hill to defund this mega giant of the abortion industry.
So who are the heroes of the day?
Well, Mike Pence is, in my mind, the hero of this particular effort. It was his amendment that was attached to the continuing resolution, which is takes care of funding for the federal government from March 1st through September. And without passing that continuing resolution, or CR, there will be no government. There'll be a government shutdown. So the pressure is really on. And Mike and our pro-life friends in the House including those new freshmen, have stepped up to the plate and have taken some arrows pointed at them by a well-funded abortion industry and stood the test of time. So we're really pleased at where we are at this point. We move now on to the Senate, but considering the fact that the House has defunded Obamacare and Planned Parenthood, a veto is all but certain from Mr. Obama.
Well, that's the big question. What happens in the Senate? Are they willing, for the sake of shutting down the government, to stand by Planned Parenthood?
Well, that's a big question. The House is much more dependable as far as that goes, much more on record as saying they will stand against it. But you really, Roland, you have to understand, too, and I'm sure you do, that the momentum is behind defunding Planned Parenthood. Lila Rose's efforts, which we'll talk about more in a little bit, has really been perfectly timed to shine a light on the criminal activity of Planned Parenthood. The government is desperately looking for ways to cut federal spending. And Planned Parenthood gets $363 million each year of our tax dollars just through Title X alone. So it is an easy and fast way to cut some of the money from the budget. And in light of all of this, I think that we can really apply pressure on the Senate to get them to cooperate. Would I predict whether or not they'll do that? No, I just couldn't do that because we don't know what the Senate will do. But we have got to, as citizens, contact our senators and really apply pressure in these days and weeks ahead.
I think it's important to note, Brad, and you're very good at this, about it's not just Planned Parenthood. There's actually, I would say maybe a conglomeration of different organizations that support each other and feed off of each other and cross-mingle funds with each other. Just because we may defund Planned Parenthood, do we have to be vigilant that some other organization may capture those funds and then, through the back door, transfer it back to Planned Parenthood?
Well, it's my understanding that what we're going after is funding abortion of any kind whatsoever, whether it's Planned Parenthood or other parts of the abortion industry. And if some other no-name entity moves in to take the place and wants to further Planned Parenthood's agenda, those funds would not go to that organization either, from my understanding of how Mike has structured that amendment. Specifically, Planned Parenthood is mentioned, Planned Parenthood Federation of America, and they list every one of their affiliates throughout the United States.
Yeah, but then there are some unwritten affiliates. The thing that I found interesting in doing a little bit of research is the woman who is the head of Planned Parenthood. I think her name is Cecile Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who she is married to?
No, I don't believe I do.
She's married to Andy Stern, the head of the SEIU, Service Employees International Union. Have you been hearing a lot about them recently up in Wisconsin?
Well, I'm in Ohio.
Yeah, but I'm saying if you've been watching the news, the whole business up there, these ties are really remarkable when you start researching who's who and who knows who. That's why I'm concerned that maybe it's a victory, but we have to be much more careful than we have been how that's applied.
Well, yeah, we're celebrating today, but tomorrow we're going right back to the grindstone,
right,
and putting our efforts there. So, no, this is not a done deal at all. But it is a monumental breakthrough, and I think it's gaining some momentum that we can then take to the Senate to use to push for a victory there.
Yeah, because we've also talked about how, the money cycles out of Congress, well, first out of our pockets, into Congress, out of Congress, and then into these organizations, and surprise of surprises, look what kind of a large chunk actually winds up going back to these politicians that support abortion services in the first place. It's almost as if they're stealing from us to fund their own campaigns. I don't want to say that too harshly, but it could give that appearance.
Oh, are you telling me you're cynical about politicians?
Cynical? Incredulous, more likely, but yeah, cynical. Okay, it's Friday. I'll go on to the light side of things.
Yeah, well, experience has taught us that we can expect the worst from Washington, the Beltway there in D.C., And but I think there's been a reawakening, Roland, of Americans to the fact that we're sick of it and we're not going to put up with it anymore. And that's why we saw such a tremendous result in the elections last November 2nd. The key is whether or not these elected officials will remember the message we sent. Clearly, Mr. Obama has not, and neither has Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader there. So it's up to us to apply pressure where we can be effective.
You know, you nailed it. We had a program that you and I did about a year and a half ago when this little group of people, these odd people who got together and called themselves Tea Partiers, started to come on the national scene, and you nailed it. You said this was going to be a factor of influence greater than we could ever have imagined at the time. You are prescient, aren't you?
Well, I saw that this momentum was gaining. It was, the principles were held by a vast majority of Americans, and I say it again, we have to pay attention to where this movement is saying we need to go. Now, some of the pro-life or the Tea Party groups do not take a position on, you know, conservative social issues, and abortion is one of them. But they fully understand that 80% of their membership are pro-life people. So we have had some very clear conversations with them about how we need to make sure and not promote any pro-abortion people or pro-death agenda.
Well, if they respect the founding documents as much as they say they do, then they will have an affinity for endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights.
Mm-hmm.
Life being one of those.
Right. And we've made a lot of progress in the last year on that. But there is something that's present in the conservative body of politics today, and that is a desire to solely focus on fiscal issues, conservative fiscal issues. Even at the CPAC meeting that was held in Washington last week, one of the sponsors was a homosexual group of CPAC, which was unheard of a few years ago. But it is seeping into conservative circles, and we've seen pressure for them wanting us to pull away from the abortion issue. So we have to be very careful, have to continue to put the pressure on to the conservative party that abortion is a foundational issue on which they will build other conservative victories.
Brad, you know, you're a good Lutheran kid like me. You know the temptation of 30 pieces of silver.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You
and we're seeing that. And what concerns me is that we're seeing some erosion within our so-called own people of conservative, you know, politicians and constituencies. So we really have to be on guard with that.
And something that you do, and when we talk to the Susan B. Anthony list and a number of other folks who are in the pro-life cause, we don't want to paint just one side of the picture. There are some very good Democrats out there who are genuinely pro-life, in spite of how some of them turned out during the whole health care debate. There are some that held true to the cause. We don't want to divide them.
Absolutely. And Congressman Lipinski is one of those shining stars as far as pro-lifers who held true to his position. Sadly, we've seen the numbers diminish, but absolutely. The concerns and well-being of unborn babies and their parents crosses all political, ethical, economic boundaries. That's what makes our movement so effective.
Brad Mattis is the executive director and co-founder of Life Issues Institute out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Brad, I did not ask you for the website. I usually give that out, but I neglected. What is that?
That's lifeissues.org.
And you're still doing the TV program as well, right?
We are, as a matter of fact.
Emmy award-winning TV program? Yes. Let's not forget that.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. Yes, we were in Las Vegas last week filming a couple episodes, and it's just I never cease to be amazed, Roland, at the strength of people who stand in the face of personal crises and choose life and are blessed. The story we covered last week was a woman who was in the middle of a late-term abortion procedure at about 20 weeks, and a sidewalk counselor was persistent and changed her mind. They took her to an emergency room where the laminaria dilating her cervix were removed, and after we filmed last week we celebrated the first birthday of this little girl who survived against all odds.
Thanks be to
God. And the family said after they chose life that they have been blessed immensely. So that's, of course, the philosophy we want to stress with the program and our radio programs and everything we do at Life Issues Institute.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The phone lines are open for your calls. Questions or comments are welcome. So let's get down to, now, when I first heard about Lila Rose, it was through your website. Tell me about who she is, and let's talk about these videos that have been coming to light.
Well, she's a firecracker, and all I can say, Roland, is I'm glad she's on our side. For those who follow Glenn Beck, at the 5 o'clock hour, the program just ended, and Lila was on with Glenn. And I interviewed Lila years ago when she first started this undercover work and was hugely impressed by her. She is fearless. She will go where others fear to tread. And she is articulate, she's knowledgeable, and she really has Planned Parenthood on the run. And this is she's a great example to your listeners that one person can truly make a difference. And without her and this latest project that she did, we wouldn't have the momentum to have the vote that resulted in the House today.
So some have argued that these are isolated incidents. Now, how uniformly is Planned Parenthood in this type of behavior? And detail gently for me, for anyone who may not have seen the videos, what behavior was being revealed by these undercover tapes?
Right. Well, we do have to be careful. It is family radio. But this latest case, they operated undercover in abortion mills in the Northeast. We're talking about Washington, D.C., several locations in Virginia, and the Bronx in New York, and a guy was posing as a pimp, and he had his prostitute with him, also posing. They came in. He went in usually under the guise of suffering from some symptoms of an STD and asked about getting treated, and then he inquired about treating of the women under his so-called management, and dropping the bombshell that some of them were only 14 or 15 years old, and that they were new into the country and didn't speak English. And we're talking about trafficking humans, young teenage girls. This is sex slavery. And when these details were shared to these Planned Parenthood staffers, they didn't blink. I've read the transcripts of all of these undercover events, and none of them were appalled by what they heard. None of them said, this is wrong, you can't do this. They all told them how they could remain confidential, get the STD testing that they needed, get the secret abortions they needed, to get the contraception they needed for them so that they could continue working. And in one case, the person also told him to go give blood if he suspected he had an STD, because he could get tested that way. So just imagine putting everybody who needs blood at risk by telling somebody who absolutely should not be giving blood to do so for self-serving purposes. If I were the DA of New Jersey, I would have every Planned Parenthood under observation or closed down until this was thoroughly investigated, because this staff person said she regularly tells people to do that.
Well, see, that's the question, Brad. Is Planned Parenthood above the law? Because even though this is the first time the videotapes have come out, this behavior has been alleged for a number of years.
Oh, well, and they've done these videotapes for the past 4 years. And we're talking not only sex trafficking, but we're talking about covering up the sexual abuse of minors. We're talking about skirting of parental consent laws, which they were helping underage kids getting around the parental laws in states to have abortions. They have been caught fabricating medical information in order to convince women to have abortions. They've even been caught taking money by donors that were for the sole purpose of aborting African American babies. So we're talking about blatant racism here. If there's a cookie jar, they've been caught with their hands in it, and it's been consistent over the years, a couple people have gotten fired. But what is amazing is that they still get our tax dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars every year.
Well, have you been watching the interviews they've been giving, especially today? You may have had a chance to catch some of the press. Women's health is going to suffer. The rights of women are going to suffer. If Planned Parenthood is not there, women's health overall is going to be in a catastrophe.
Yeah, and they've got a commercial out that shows a woman going down a hallway dressed in a 50s dress and opening up a closet with a coat hanger hanging in it, saying that women will be going to back alley abortions if Planned Parenthood isn't funded. Well, the truth is, we all were appalled at what happened or was revealed in Philadelphia a couple weeks ago, where a legal abortion facility was operating like a back alley abortion mill. And again, it's hard to describe some of the conditions in there for family radio, but there were a couple of flea infested cats in there that were sick and did not have a litter box.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there was evidence of bleeding everywhere. Stuff was rusty, unclean, filthy, sordid conditions. A sophomore in high school wrote a medication chart for pain meds and anesthetic drugs, which is very dangerous for anyone to administer unless they are a trained person. And in one case, a woman died because of that.
You know, by listening to you describe that, one might get the impression that a back alley abortion is actually safer than this guy.
Well, yeah, that could be argued. Yeah. But the problem is we already have back alley legal abortion
right.
mills that are putting women's health at risk and, of course, killing the babies.
This is an extraordinary thing. Why is it? You mentioned a moment ago about some of the politicians who are backing away from this. They want to be more fiscally oriented than socially oriented. We've talked about this before, is how you keep the energy level up, how you keep the attention up, because the problem is this is just an icky subject, and I think after almost 40 years since Roe versus Wade, golly, people just don't want to deal with it anymore.
Well, when we're tempted to run out of steam, in pushing this, we have to remind ourselves, Roland, that every day 3,200 babies die in abortion chambers across the United States. You know, every 21 seconds, a heart is stopped to abortion. That's a beating heart killed by an abortionist. The carnage is so awful. In one day, more babies die than all of the victims on 9/11. That 9/11 is happening 365 times a year. So the carnage and the cost for America is unfathomable, and so we've got to work hard to end it.
Isn't it interesting just to know, we've got about a minute left, Brad, that in spite of what you've said, in spite of what you've described, the media is treating Lila Rose like the aggressor here, like she is the villain in this story. Isn't that remarkable?
It is, but she just bats those beautiful brown eyes of hers and smiles, and she shares the truth, and the truth is getting out. More and more people are finding out about the ugly reality of abortion, Planned Parenthood's consistent criminal activity, and I think it's a matter of time before we cut off the head of this abortion giant.
Well, here at KFUO, folks hear you regularly with your Life Issues update. You have the newsletter, you have the website. What's the best way to support Life Issues, and how do we get all that good stuff that you provide?
Well, they can certainly send checks often and for large amounts. But the best way to get information is going to our website at lifeissues.org, and I suggest they subscribe to a free weekly email that I send out, usually every Friday. We sent one out today, and they can get that information. They can be up on the latest happenings as things change. And thanks to technology now, we can keep you informed so close to when it's happening.
Amen. Thank you for the work you do. God bless you, my friend. And, little victory is a good thing. Celebrate tonight. You've earned it.
We will, and then we'll go back to work tomorrow.
Amen. Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Studio A continues. I see John Eidsmo. Colonel Eidsmo is in the wings. You don't want to miss this. It'll be a great segment. Islam, Herman the German, and all sorts of points in between. Stick around.
Concordia University, Wisconsin, St. Louis Center offers degree programs in business management, criminal justice, healthcare management, human resource management, and theology. An MBA program with 9 concentrations is also available. Classes start monthly with experiential credit options. Concordia University, Wisconsin, St. Louis Center, 10825 Watson Road, near 44 and 270, 314-984-8840, or on the web at cuw.edu/St. Louis. I'm Diane Summers, host of The Essence, each weekday between 1 and 3 here on KFUO Radio. Sacred and classical music reflecting the beauty of creation and the great heritage of the church throughout the ages. Join me weekdays as we explore and experience the great inspiration provided by some great classics. Music for your daily walk.
The Essence with Diane Summers is underwritten on KFUO Radio by Lutheran Senior Services. Older adults living life to the fullest.
Women, one more rib than men?
Answers with Ken Ham, the visionary behind the full-scale Noah's Ark to be built south of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Have you ever heard the claim that a woman has an additional rib? You know, sadly, some Christians still use this myth to try to show non-Christians the Bible is true. These Christians say that because God took a rib from Adam to create Eve, all men today now have one less rib. But that's wrong. We've got to know some basic genetics here. Think about it. If someone loses an arm or a leg in an accident, does that mean that sometime in the future that person's children will be missing an arm or a leg? Or if you have an appendix removed, your future children will be born without an appendix? Of course not. Our genes determine our physiology. Christians need to stop using wrong arguments to support the Bible. There's already enough truth in the book of Genesis confirmed by real science to show people that God's word is accurate and must be heeded.
Using real science, we can show you that it was possible to build a massive Noah's Ark over 4,000 years ago. For the compelling evidence, you need to watch our DVD on Noah's Ark. And that video is yours for a donation of any size. Just call toll-free 1-888-89-ANSWERS. We'll also give you exciting information on the full-scale Ark we're building. As we close out the week, get the excellent DVD when you call 888-89-ANSWERS or go to the web at answersoffer.org.
Coming up this weekend from Focus on the Family, dating advice for married couples. Do you have a regular date night with your spouse? How fairy tales can teach your kids about God and the dangers of emotional promiscuity. All that and more on the next Weekend Magazine.
Saturday mornings at 10 on KFUO Radio.
If it's in the headlines, we'll think about it. If it's a topic of conversation at the water cooler, we'll discuss it. If it's something we need to remember, I'll remind you. Hi, this is Dale Meyer, inviting you to hear the Meyer Minute on KFUO Radio. Weekday mornings and afternoons, I'll bring you fresh commentary from a Christian perspective. The Meyer Minute, addressing today's topics the way God sees it on KFUO Radio.
Lift Every Voice, a Black History Month celebration with the St. Louis Symphony in Unison Chorus and the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, is Friday at 7:30 p.m. at Powell Symphony Hall. Hear music by John Williams, Camille Saint-Saëns, Scott Joplin, with works old and new, sacred and secular. Lift Every Voice, a Black History Month celebration, is sure to inspire. Tickets are $20 in advance, $25 on the day of the concert.
Good afternoon and welcome back. This is Studio A on listener-supported KFUO Radio. You know, I'm just going to dispense with all the formalities. This is such a treat to have Colonel John Eidsmo in studio with us. He's up in St. Louis doing a little bit of work for Lutherans for Life. Has brought a friend with him, Lowell Hybe, who's the communications director for Lutherans for Life. Gentlemen, welcome to KFUO. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here, Roland. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is a really good day for the pro-life movement, isn't it?
It is.
Not that every day isn't a good day for the pro-life movement, but you know, this passage of the Pence Amendment, the defunding of Planned Parenthood. How important is that to what you guys do?
Well, one of the things I think is very important about it is it shows that the House members, particularly the new House members, are going to stand firm for their principles rather than just caving in, and I appreciate that. Now, here's a question that I am not sure of, and that is whether or not this defunding will have to have the concurrence of the Senate. The reason I'm not sure about that is that if this is not an ongoing appropriation, then any new appropriation for Planned Parenthood would have to have the concurrence of both houses, so that means, in effect, that either house could effectively veto it by itself. What may happen is eventually this may go into conference, and eventually they may reach a compromise on this with some aspects of the Obama health care program and other things, but I'm just very, very encouraged. And I might add, too, there are polls now that show that, well, a slight, and not all that slight, but a portion, a majority of the American public today is pro-life, but at the same time, an overwhelming majority are against public funding of abortions. And a lot of people are not aware of the extent to which Planned Parenthood is involved in abortion itself and how its founder, Margaret Sanger, was an advocate of euthanasia and sterilization. Frankly, Margaret Sanger would make Lady Macbeth look like Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, really, when you see what her actual background was.
You know, Colonel Eisenman, the one thing that strikes me as really interesting in what you said, you are a constitutional scholar, you're a professor of law, and you don't know what's going to happen next. Now, what are they going to do in Washington where they're far less informed about the system?
Well, they don't necessarily consult the Constitution to decide what to do. That's the problem.
Lowell, jump in here. What do you think?
Well, it's always good to see pro-life congressmen take a stand and follow through on things. There's been many a pro-life congressman or woman elected saying pro-life things, but there's really very little follow-up. So this is a good thing, and Planned Parenthood should not be getting government money. They make a lot of money on abortions every year, millions of dollars worth of abortions, so this is a good, positive move for the House.
Now, this is the first time you've joined us on Studio A here at KFUO. What is it that the Communications Director for Lutherans for Life does?
The Communications Director works on the Lutherans for Life website. He also does editing of all the materials that go out, the Life Day Journal, any of our printed pieces. That's what I work on. I also do some video work and anything related to what the public might see, I'm generally involved with.
Do you contribute to that as well?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
Now, do you also speak like John does as part of the Speakers Bureau?
I haven't for quite some time. In my early time at Lutherans for Life, I did a little speaking, but most of it's in-house and working with the editing and publishing end of things.
So how have you come to be hooked up with John today, coming to the studio together?
I came here. We're at a board meeting here on the seminary campus, and I heard he was coming down here, so I thought I would snap a few pictures and it evolved into this.
You drafted it.
That's well. Yeah, I have learned the craft. You take advantage of opportunity when it presents itself. Now, for the folks that are fans of Colonel John Eidsmo, there is an opportunity. If you're, you know, Herman, Missouri is not too far from St. Louis, and if you're out maybe Columbia, Missouri way, if you want to take a drive down to Herman, you're going to be speaking tomorrow and Sunday, from what I understand, at Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church, where David Rawlings Sr. is the pastor.
That is correct, and tomorrow night I'll be speaking at 7, and the topic there will be on the Anglo-Saxon influence on our common law, and this begins with the very name Herman itself, of what we call, as you called him, Herman the German, or Herman the Liberator, or as he was known in Roman times as Arminius the Liberator, this German chieftain who united the North German tribes and drove back the Romans across the Rhine. And the practical effect of this was that the Teutonic common law that had been held throughout Germany for centuries before remained intact north and east of the Rhine. South of it, you find that the various tribes in the south generally adopted various aspects of Roman law. The Visigothic Code is an interesting code, but it's mostly the Roman law, just put in Germanic terms. But north of that line, because of the Battle of Teutoburg Forest in 9 AD, that is 2,000 years ago, because of that, the areas of Scandinavia and North Germany remained with the old Teutonic common law that was decentralized, individualized, an emphasis on individual rights, trial by jury, government by the heads of the local Witan or the local community. And here's what's interesting about this is that in the 400s AD, after the Romans withdrew from Britain, the Angles and the Saxons and the Jutes, three tribes of northern Germany and of southern Denmark, came to England, what was Britain then, and made it in effect Angle land or England, and they brought that common law with them. And in England, they established it, and when Alfred the Great drafted his Book of Dooms or Book of Judgments and began it with a recitation of the Ten Commandments, he was taking the old Germanic common law and making it the common law that eventually is articulated by Blackstone and Cook and others and became the basis for our common law in America today.
And everything was going along fine, and then a bunch of Frenchmen showed up in 1066, and we have this crummy language called English now that makes no sense to anyone.
And, of course, they were speaking mostly French at that time, and William the Conqueror. In fact, you'll find that after 1066, for well over 600-700 years, you'll find that there is a perpetual conflict in England between those who want to keep the old decentralized common law principles, and these are, to a large extent, the Anglo-Saxons and their Viking and their Celtic allies fighting against the Normans, who are a mixture of French and Scandinavian, but had adopted pretty much French ways of centralized government. And you'll find that throughout all of these struggles, that eventually the common law becomes the form that it is, and even though they adopt French institutions, they keep the principles of the common law. And here's something interesting. 1215 A.D., when you see a popular revolt against a Norman king, King John, you see a Scandinavian, probably, by the name of Stephen Langton. Now, Stephen Langton is a genuine hero of constitutional history. He was the Archbishop of Canterbury. He was from the area north of the Danelaw, Lincolnshire, and very likely Scandinavian in background. But it was Archbishop Langton that organized the barons and the bishops to stand firm against King John, and he either drafted or took a major hand in the drafting of the Magna Carta. And the Magna Carta is not a document of unheralded and radical new rights. It's really a very conservative, almost reactionary document, reasserting the ancient God-given rights of Englishmen against the usurpations of a Norman king, which, in that same tone exactly, is what our founding fathers did in the Declaration of Independence.
Well, it must be remarkable having a guy like John serve on the board with you guys.
It's incredible. And for those who are looking to go hear him speak, go.
Yes.
You won't regret it. You will learn a lot. And will you have your books and DVDs and CDs along?
I consider it a cardinal sin not to have a book available for somebody who wants to buy one. So, yes, I will. But
now, see, now that's
I might add that that's only one thing that I'll be talking about. That'll be at 7 tomorrow night at the Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church. Then we'll take a break, probably around 8 for a few minutes, and then I'll be speaking on a Christian perspective on Islam and the Crusades. And it won't be a hatchet job, but I assure you it won't be a whitewash either. But on Sunday morning at 8:15, we'll be having a Sunday school class that I'll be teaching, and that will be on a Lutheran look at the culture wars, looking at the culture wars from the standpoint of the conflict between the Christian right and the left today, but where a Lutheran should be standing in this area. And, of course, I'm very much on the side of the conservative elements in our culture war, but at the same time, we do need to understand the Lutheran Two Kingdoms concept and how that applies. And then at, I believe it'll be around 12:30 or maybe 12, anyway, thereabouts, I'll be giving one more presentation. This is titled The Three Myths of Secular America, those being the myth of the deist or skeptic founding fathers, the myth of the living Constitution, and the myth of separation of church and state. And all are welcome. You have the address, I believe, don't you?
I do have the address, and I would probably have to wonder if this isn't a proper Lutheran affair. There's going to be a meal served somewhere in there, I'm sure.
I'm not sure about a meal or not. Being a Lutheran affair, it almost has to be.
It has to be. Again,
at least Jell-O.
Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church. Pastor David Rawlings Sr. is the shepherd of that congregation. 1952 West Highway 100, Herman, Missouri, 65041, if you want to pop that into your GPS. More information, why not contact the church? Area code 573-486-3335. So when it comes to Islam, John, did you catch most recently, it was the Prime Minister of England who came out and gave a big speech about multiculturalism. Angela Merkel in Germany had given a similar speech, and Sarkozy in France as well, where they're talking about the failures of multiculturalism. And when you talk about contemporary society, do you touch on that in your discussion?
I won't be talking about those particular addresses, but I certainly will be talking about the way we look at multiculturalism. And there are actually a few scholars, they happen to be Muslim scholars at law schools, who are arguing today that the common law owes its origin to Islam. And I have a book coming out on the common law, just submitted to the publishers now, and I've got two contracts on it already, but it's 1,057 pages, typed single-spaced, and more than that, it'll be five volumes. But at any rate, I've analyzed the history of the common law a great deal, and I can tell you that that is basically nonsense.
How do you do it? I can't find my shoes in the morning when I get out of bed.
Well, now that the book has been submitted, I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing between 1 and 4 a.m., but those seem to be the productive times for me.
I did have a quick question for John.
Go
since
ahead.
We're talking about things. You mentioned Blackstone, and that used to be kind of the stellar, the always-looked-to commentator on law. Would that be fair to say?
I think that's definitely fair to say, more in the United States even than in England.
How would you say he is presented in this day and age in law schools generally?
You know, I went through law school 1967 to 70 at the U of Iowa, and I don't remember the name Blackstone ever being mentioned.
Really?
But we have some things going for us today. There are some distinctively Christian law schools, Liberty University and Regent University and the Oak Brook College of Law where I teach. Interestingly enough, I'm going for a few weeks every month to teach at the Hondong International Law School in Korea.
Wow.
And they have a Blackstone classroom, they have a Cook classroom, and others like that, and they treasure this common law heritage that we are leaving behind today. The one good thing I would say that we have going in law schools today is that the issues that when I was in law school just seemed to have been swept aside. That is, whether or not there is a higher law, whether you call it biblical law or natural law or a combination of both, and those issues that they just didn't even consider at that time, about the only ones that were even talking about natural law were a few of the Roman Catholic law schools. Today, those issues are being debated again, and that, I think, is very encouraging. The phrase separation of church and state, when I was in law school, I think most of my fellow students thought that's what the First Amendment actually said. But again, I think some of these things are being challenged in law schools today. Now, I have one study that I did where I found that, if I recall the figure correctly, using what we call a Westlaw computer to see case citations, I put in the name of Blackstone and found that from the beginning of our constitutional history in 1789 through the present, Blackstone has been cited in state Supreme Court or federal court cases no less than 20,000 times, and about as much in recent times as before, so he hasn't been forgotten. But it was said that many an argument in an American court was settled by a quotation from Blackstone. That was true in the early days, and there was a man called James Kent, we just know him today as Chancellor Kent from New York, and at age 14, when he was an undergraduate student, he devoured all four volumes of Blackstone, and then he wrote his own commentaries, Kent's commentaries on American law, patterned them in the same four-volume arrangement as Blackstone's, and acknowledged all the way through that Blackstone was his inspiration.
That's Colonel John Eidsmo. As you can tell, he is a professor of law, constitutional scholar, attorney as well, Lutherans for Life speaker. We're also joined by Lowell Hybe, who's the communications director for Lutherans for Life. Phone lines are open, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's mention again, John, you're speaking at Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church down in Herman, Missouri. Now, the good folks in Herman would probably be very cross with me if I didn't mention a couple of fine wineries in that neighborhood as well. You should probably stop in and visit them while you have a chance to be down there. 1952 West Highway 100 in Herman, and that's the congregation of Pastor David Rawlings Sr. And it's going to be tomorrow evening at 7, as well as Sunday morning Bible study and some additional discussion following that.
And the public is welcome.
So what is it that Lutherans for Life is up to these days, Lowell?
Well, specifically this weekend, we're having a board meeting, and we picked Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, because St. Louis is a very easy place for a lot of our board members to go to. And what is on the agenda this weekend to talk about is looking ahead for Lutherans for Life, how our ministry can reach out to more congregations, be more effective in reaching the youth, and conveying that message in a way that will make congregations want to grab onto it and hold on to it and proclaim it as part of God's Word, not as an extra thing, but as just an ingrained part of God's Word, the sanctity of human life.
Now, Lutherans for Life, is that part of the LCMS? Are you an RSO? Are you an independent organization?
We are an independent organization and also an RSO, but we receive no funding from the Missouri Synod itself. It's all individual contributions or, you know, help from churches and things like that, with a few grants.
Well, you know, it would probably be a good idea then, since we love the work you guys do, because you provide guys like Colonel Eidsmo to me to put on the program and, you know, put the cause forward. What's the contact information for folks that, A, want to find out about Lutherans for Life, but, B, support you?
If you want to go to www.lutheransforlife.org, it has all the info on the organization and ways to give and support. You can also find out how you can get Colonel John Eidsmo at your congregation, if you so wish, and I sure hope you do, because you won't regret it. And it won't be a fluffy couple hours with Colonel John Eidsmo. You will learn a lot. And you can also give us a call at 888-364-LIFE. And if your church has not observed a Life Sunday, for example, this year, you can do it anytime. We have plenty of materials.
Colonel, where were you when I went to college?
Probably going to college.
I have. I'm not that old.
As old as me. Okay.
But no, I mean, these things. You know, when I first heard of Blackstone, mentioning Blackstone, was when I was taking certifications to be a plans examiner, and there was a legal component, and somebody suggested to me I get this law dictionary, and there was some connection. But I went through college taking public administration courses, law courses, constitutional law courses, never heard the name.
Well, here's something interesting about Blackstone you might find fascinating. We know about the evangelist in the early 1800s, Charles Finney.
Yeah.
And Finney was a lawyer. And he was not a Christian, but Finney started reading Blackstone. And as he was reading Blackstone's commentaries, he was intrigued by all the biblical citations in those commentaries. And so he went out and got himself a Bible and read it and became a Christian. And many of the modern revival methods that are used in some churches today have their roots in Charles Finney.
Buzz just came in and handed me the itinerary. I guess someone from Herman called in. They've been listening. Tomorrow at 7 p.m. on Saturday, Sunday, the 8:15, the Sunday school, like you said. And then also, it says here, speaking after church, approximately 11 a.m.
11, okay.
Here's the important bit. Refreshments will be served. That's what I wanted to make sure and get in there. So what's the best way that congregations can help out Lutherans for Life, other than bringing somebody in to preach or talk to the congregation?
Well, that's a pretty good one, to bring in Dr. Lamb, our executive director, or John Eidsmo. We have a whole list of speakers on our Speakers Bureau page. But really, it's to talk to your pastor, talk to your elders, talk to your board, bring our materials into your church. There's materials for all ages. If you have a school, we have a Teaching for Life curricula that works with the lessons they are already using and just adds a life component to it. So there's just many ways to share the life message other than just talking about the abortion issue, which we need to talk about. But it's not just that, if just is the word, but it's a whole world view.
Well, you know, one of the things, Roland, that really impresses me about the work Lutherans for Life does is the literature, that the various little pamphlets and so on that we produce on not just abortion, that's obviously the issue that probably energizes us more than any other, but we're involved in things like the stem cell research issue and in vitro fertilization, adoption, abstinence, many issues like that. But we have a wide variety of pamphlets. They are informative, they are biblically centered, and they are very tastefully produced, and we make these available. In fact, they're available through the Concordia Publishing House now. But that is one of the best things you could probably do, is to get some of these materials and make them available on a rack or a table in the foyer of your church.
Go ahead, Lowell.
And he mentioned adoption. I just wanted to put in a plug for our conference coming up this August. It's a ways off, but people need to plan. It's August 5th and 6th down in Irving, Texas, the Dallas area. And the theme is Adopted in Christ. And we're going to have Dr. Russell Moore, who wrote a book, Adopted for Life. I don't know if you've had him as a guest, but he'd be worth getting. It's a great book on what he and his wife did in their adopting of two boys from a Russian orphanage.
And you had the conference was in Wisconsin last year,
yes,
right?
Green Bay.
Yeah, we had a couple of guests that have come on and talked about the presentations they made there. So we do keep track of you.
Good.
At the risk of being really boring for the listeners who've heard this before, I want to say this to the benefit of both of you gentlemen, that what you're doing really does have an effect. Spoke to Dr. Gene Edward Veith earlier this week. You know, the teaching that KFUO has put forward, the speakers that you guys have supplied, about 10 years ago when my wife was pregnant with our second child, was misdiagnosed as being Down syndrome. Now, Down syndrome children are aborted to the rate of 90% plus these days.
That's right.
Okay. The machinery of the hospital went into action, because you get put into a whole different environment when that kind of a diagnosis comes up. And we encountered a doctor who kept saying, you have to make the right decision. We said, no, we're having this child. This is our child. No, you have to make the right decision. Well, the moral to the story, to make a very long story much shorter, is my 10-year-old today does not have Down syndrome. And if it weren't for the work that you guys do and the other pastors and other teachers that come across KFUO, I don't know that we could have made the right decision at that time, because the pressure was tremendous.
Thank you. It's good to hear stories like that. And we hear them, people call and write, and they appreciate the material and the biblical basis of it all and the gospel-centeredness of it all.
So when I say thank you for what you gentlemen do, seriously, I am grateful for what you do.
Thank you.
So whatever we can do to help, give the contact information again for Lutherans for Life.
www.lutheransforlife.org, or the phone number is 888-364-LIFE.
And if someone is considering an abortion right now, maybe someone's in a great spot of difficulty, what do you have to say to them, John?
I would say go to a crisis pregnancy center and get the testing that they can do for you. Feel free to call Lutherans for Life, and we can put you in touch with a counselor that can help. But bear in mind that whatever the issues are, you are talking about a living human being. You know, one of the things I think that's going on that's very important in this area is the personhood amendment movement. And Justice Blackmun in Roe versus Wade had said that they could not define when life begins, but that a person was not a person under the 14th Amendment until birth. I think he was misreading the 14th Amendment, but regardless of that, what we're seeking to do in a number of states, and Iowa is one that's taking the lead in this area now, but one of the things we're trying to do is get states to adopt either amendments to their state constitution or statutes that declare that life begins at conception and that a person is a person from conception. And if enough states do this, this may be a basis for challenging and possibly overruling Roe versus Wade. And that is the important issue. In fact, I remember the first time I was ever on a radio talk show on this issue, way back in 1970, when I was just out of law school, waiting to go on active duty with the Air Force and working with Sioux City Right to Life. This is long before Roe versus Wade was decided, of course, but there was a bill in the Iowa legislature.
We got 30 seconds, John.
Anyway, the host said, you know, the real issue here is whether or not that unborn child is a human person. And the other side doesn't want to talk about that. And he's right. They don't want to talk about it because it is the key issue and all the evidence is in our favor.
Jump in real quick.
And if you are experiencing an unplanned pregnancy, you're not alone. There are thousands of people that want to help you, and they just need to know. And if you had an abortion and you regret it, call Word of Hope through Lutherans for Life.
And again, that's Saturday and Sunday. You can visit with I promoted you again. Colonel John Eidsmo is going to be at Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church. Reverend David Rawlings Sr. is pastor there, 1952 West Highway 100. Contact the church, 573-486-3335, for more information and directions. Good night. God bless. We're back on Monday. We'll miss you till then. Bye-bye.
Join Roland Lettner and guests Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. in Studio A. Email the program with topics and show ideas at this address, rlettner@kfuo.org, or by sending mail to KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Studio A programs are archived at kfuo.org.